That concludes today's readings from Us Weekly. This has been Lydia Coppell for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7. Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, Extraordinary Ordinary People, a memoir of family written and narrated by Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice has excelled as a diplomat, political scientist, and concert pianist. Her achievements run the gamut from helping to oversee the collapse of communism in Europe and the decline of the Soviet Union, to working to protect the country in the aftermath of 9/11, to becoming only the second woman and the first black woman ever to serve as Secretary of State. In the 50s, Birmingham's black middle class largely succeeded in insulating their children from the most corrosive effects of racism. Condoleezza's father, John, a minister and educator, instilled in her a love of sports and politics. Her mother, a teacher, developed Condoleezza's passion for piano and exposed her to the fine arts. From both, Rice learned the value of faith in the face of hardship and the importance of giving back to the community. Extraordinary Ordinary People, a memoir of family, written and narrated by Condoleezza Rice. Weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 39 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the low 50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram's oil report for Saturday, February 20th. New analytics pop up to help ESG initiatives. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Driven by public and investor demand, as well as the conviction it's the right way to do business, energy companies are increasingly embracing ESG, Environment, Social, and Governance initiatives. In its sustainability report issued last fall, EOG Resources said its commitment to ESG is its top competitive advantage as the industry works to recover from the pandemic and resulting oil market crash. EOG Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Bill Thomas said in the report that executive compensation is tied to ESG goals, adding reduction of greenhouse gas and methane emissions intensify rates to the goals that determines executives' annual bonuses. This year, he said the company has established a separately weighted ESG-specific performance goal that includes reducing greenhouse gas, methane, and flaring emissions intensity rates, recordable incident rates, and oil spill rates. That concern spans the energy spectrum, with Eagle Claw Midstream celebrating several milestone ESG goals, including sourcing 100% of its electricity from renewable energy sources as of this coming April, keeping its employees safe during the pandemic, and stepping up donations and involvement in various community programs supporting healthcare workers, school, first responders, and teachers. Jamie Welch, President and Chief Executive Officer, explained to the Reporter Telegram by email that ESG is important to each and every employee at Eagle Claw, quote, because it's central to our purpose of playing our role in helping to address and stem the impacts of climate change for generations to come, end quote. Secondly, he continued, the company's key stakeholders, investors, and lenders expect the company to protect the environment, build strong relationships inside and outside the company, and ensure it has the right standards and systems in place to govern themselves appropriately. In addition, he said, customers want to work with companies that share their visions of protecting the planet, keeping workers safe, and being good corporate citizens. Welch said progress on ESG initiatives is covered at every quarterly board meeting, and EagleClaw will publish its first sustainability report in June. While the board is very interested in ESG initiatives, quote, our toughest critics are our own employees, as every employee at EagleClaw is an owner. They expect us to consistently make good progress as they realize that sustainability is part of how we will operate going forward, end quote. Asked what is EagleClaw's primary focus, the E, the S, or the G, Welch said the pandemic prompted a shift toward what was needed to keep employees, contractors, and the workplace safe and help communities. Despite that, he said the company has maintained a steady focus on emissions reductions, with the move to 100% renewables expected to materially reduce the company's Scope 2 emissions. Quote, and we've instituted emission detection technology at our facilities and proactively participated in several additional evaluations of emission detection technology to understand its use and application to a midstream company, he said. The rise in ESG initiatives undertaken by the energy industry has also given rise to a need to analyze where efforts need to be made, the effectiveness of corporate initiatives, and how they stack up against industry peers. Data analytics company Enverus has launched ESG Analytics, an evaluation standard for ESG benchmarks for the industry. Quote, this will help shed light on the different oil and gas companies and how they stack up, said Bernadette Johnson, Senior Vice President, Power and Renewables at Enverus. By curating their own data from public sources, she said the company can pinpoint down to the various counties, operators, and even specific sites to pinpoint emissions or other challenges. If a company, quote, is in the middle of the pack and wants to move up, or if they're near the bottom and want to move up, this will let them have a good handle on their metrics, she said. Two, she added, executives are getting lots of questions from analysts about ESG issues, so they better have a good handle on those metrics. Interest in the analytics covers the spectrum from upstream to downstream, midstream, utilities, and investors, she said. Beyond issues related to flaring and emissions, the company can also track pay disparity and diversity, allowing companies to not only rank themselves among their peers, but investors to rank investments. The Independent Petroleum Association of America has joined the efforts, launching the ESG Center in partnership with FTA Consulting. The new effort will share information with members on the growing necessity of ESG programs and how to build them. Future virtual and in-person educational events will be held to further the efforts. The goal is to help member companies who already have ESG programs and those looking to establish programs. Fellow Industry Association American Exploration and Production Council is launching its ESG metrics framework and template. Quote, robust ESG reporting is important to both companies and stakeholders, and while there are a number of frameworks available, there has been no standardized framework for reporting for the upstream oil and natural gas industry, said the association's chief executive officer, Ann Bradbury. Quote, AXPC's ESG metrics and framework reiterates the upstream oil and gas industry's commitment to sustainability, transparency, and constant improvement, end quote. The ESG framework focuses primarily on environmental metrics at this time and centers around five key areas that AXPC companies believe are important to capturing more consistent and transparent reporting across the upstream industry: greenhouse gas emissions, flaring, spills, water use, and safety. MMEX reconfigures Pecos refinery for green fuels. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Sensing changes in the fuel market, MMEX Resources is altering plans for its refinery complex planned near Fort Stockton in Pecos County. Rather than a distillation unit in a refinery producing conventional fuels, the plants are being reconfigured to produce clean fuels, including ultra-low sulfur diesel and hydrogen, and they will be powered by solar power. Quote, "We found we needed to convert our project from conventional midstream to a greener type project," Jack Hanks, President and Chief Executive Officer of MMEX, told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. The first plant will utilize natural gas feedstock to produce refined products that range from hydrogen to gas to liquids and marketable gasoline, kerosene, and ultra-low sulfur diesel. Hanks said it could produce 50 tons a day of hydrogen in the first phase and utilize 35 billion cubic feet a day of natural gas as feedstock in the first phase. The second plant will utilize the lighter crudes and condensate being produced in the region to produce, as well as the high hydrogen sulfide crudes, and process them into ultra-low sulfur diesel and motor-grade gasolines. Hanks explained that the plan had originally been to produce low sulfur diesel that would be used as drilling mud additives and a residual fuel for marine fuel oil. But the volatility in those markets prompted a shift in focus to the greener fuels. He admitted that part of the reason to focus on greener fuels is to attract investors and due to the shareholders focused on environmental concerns. Quote, "There's already quite a bit of investor interest and from shareholders excited about ESG, he said. The company is working with Polaris Engineering to utilize its proprietary UltraFuels 2 process to process the lighter crudes and condensates into ultra-low sulfur diesel, renewable diesel, and gasoline. The company is also negotiating with a European co-developer partner to develop and finance the hydrogen and gas-to-liquids project to produce hydrogen, ultra-low sulfur diesel, and gasoline with carbon capture and storage employing steam methane reformer technology utilizing natural gas as the feedstock. Currently, hydrogen is mainly used in the refining process, said Hanks, and the Fort Stockton location allows for easy transportation by rail or truck to Gulf Coast refineries. He noted that there are efforts to develop hydrogen into a transportation fuel. Quote, "There's a lot of discussion about developing hydrogen stations for transportation," he said. "It holds promise if we develop the market," end quote. In that plant, he said the carbon would be captured and either transported to exploration and production companies for use in enhanced oil recovery projects or sequestered underground. Quote, "We will capture it. The question is, what will be its use?" he said. There are big plans to provide solar power to the plants. The company formed MMEX Solar Resources in 2018 to facilitate the effort, and Hanks said it is negotiating the purchase of two tracts of 640 acres and 300 acres around the site to facilitate the program. He added that there will be a gas unit or diesel unit to back up the solar power. He hopes to utilize solar and carbon capture tax credits to help finance the work. The plants will utilize green technology that is widely available, he said. It's been a long struggle since MMEX first announced his plans for the refinery, and in that time, the world has moved toward more environmentally friendly social and governance business methods, he said. With the interest in greener fuels, quote, "Maybe it's a blessing we're not up and running," he said. Once financing is secured, The construction timeline from the date of financing for each individual project is estimated to be 15 to 18 months before reaching commercial operation for each project.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition, Saturday, February 20th, 2021. Producers challenged by iced-in equipment, icy roads during storm, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. As shivering Texans called on the state's oil and gas riches during the record-breaking cold weather, producers faced severe challenges trying to answer the call. Widespread outages were reported across the Permian Basin, where extra-rich gas laden with natural gas liquid freezes up in the gathering and flow lines not equipped to deal with extraordinary low and persistent temperatures, Susie Boyd, founder and president of Caballo Loco Midstream, told the Reporter Telegram. She said there were reports of facilities that depend on purchase power to operate, experiencing outages resulting from rolling blackouts imposed by the power companies, causing tank batteries to shut down. In addition, she said water gathering and disposal systems froze up, leaving no alternative but to shut in wells. Gas gatherers, she continued, experienced similar outages at compressor stations and gas plants related to a myriad of events, including lack of purchase power, freezing of line pipe, freezing of instrumentation and controls, defaulting to facility ESD, emergency shutdown, freezing of various process systems at the gas plant, and simply from lack of gas supply from producers. In some cases, wells were shut in when crude trucks were unable to pick up loads, thereby filling all available on-site storage until shut-in was the only option. Outages reported for crude pipelines include lack of purchase power to operate lease automated custody transfer units and pumps and at the downstream terminals. In all cases, response time for repairs was hampered and significantly delayed by workers' inability to reach downed wells and facilities due to hazardous road conditions. She added, all this was taking place while personnel dealt with the safety of their employees and families related to lack of power, heat, and water at their homes and offices. Tad Owens, Vice President, Communications and Government Relations at Pioneer Natural Resources, said, right now we are focused on the safety of our employees and their families, as well as getting operations back up and running in a safe manner. We will address weather impacts on our earnings call February 24th. Lexi Long, communications specialist with Kinder Morgan, said, we continue to manage our pipelines and facilities throughout this weather event and are working closely with our customers and state agencies to deliver natural gas across Kinder Morgan's interconnected network of pipelines. We will continue to comply with all state orders associated with this event.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 20, 2021. Viewpoints. We can't turn our back on power sources like natural gas. State Representative Tom Craddock. The Energy Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, is responsible for management of the Texas power grid. This is a standalone electric grid which covers most of the state of Texas. However, there are several factors which influence how the grid receives and distributes power. There are generators, line companies, and retail electric providers who all participate in the system. The generation in Texas consists of natural gas, coal, nuclear, wind, and solar generation. During the severe winter weather event, we saw a complete loss of wind and solar generation. Since the early 2000s, we have spent billions of dollars providing for wind and solar to be integrated into the power grid. During this period, we turned our back on our baseload power sources like natural gas. This week has demonstrated the need for a balanced power market that does not cater first to renewables. There must be an additional focus on the ability for all generation to operate in severe weather events. During this legislative session, I have been appointed to serve on the Energy Resource Committee. This committee, along with the Committee on State Affairs, has jurisdiction over the industries which power the state. I have always and will continue to be a zealous advocate for the Permian Basin and the resources we provide to not only Texas, but the entire world. I'm working through many legislative ideas which could be implemented via legislation this session to prevent another incident like we have seen this week. My priorities of protecting the oil and gas industry, as well as building oil and gas resources such as pipelines in an expedited manner, have been further magnified over the last week. I will work with my colleagues in the Texas House to develop solutions to the problems of the last week. After the hearing on February 25, I will have more definitive goals for addressing the ERCOT power grid.
Let a Texan Freeze in the Dark, by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Quote from the Wall Street Journal. The Biden administration's plan to banish fossil fuels is a greater existential threat to Americans than climate change. An editorial dated February 16th in the Wall Street Journal. There are lots of reasons for the 40% loss of the grid that caused millions of homes to become powerless this past week, and natural gas prices to spike to $600 per MBTUS. Here are a few. A sustained period of cold weather is nothing new in Nebraska. It is in South Texas. Politicians have been pushing for more green energy and have awarded considerable tax breaks for constructing wind and solar. And so that is where capital went. One cannot store wind or sunshine. One can store coal and natural gas in case of an emergency. But this was not done, as the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, works for the lowest cost kilowatt. Half the wind towers froze, and the differentials were not properly lubricated for the cold. Recall Obama promised to bankrupt anyone building a coal-fired generation plant. Now, who is bankrupt? Many wells and pipelines were also not prepared for such cold weather and were shut down. As the industry built more wind and solar, no money was spent expanding coal or natural gas facilities to supply our now 30 million plus residents with backup power. Germany soured on its green energy policies and began importing U.S. produced liquid natural gas. China still relies on coal power. After huge short-term spikes in gas prices, they are falling back to earth. Joe Biden may say carbon pollutes, but we have the cleanest air in decades. Methane emissions dropped 70% in our largest oil and gas producing regions between 2011 and 2018. And we are finally energy independent from the Middle East. If we do not have a grid that will support a few days of freezing weather, we certainly will not have a grid to support the additional demand of millions of electric cars by 2030. And planes will never fly on solar cells. There was no way any of us could have recharged an electric car this past week, but I was able to venture out in my 12-year-old Toyota SUV. Now we are being lectured by Bill Gates, who lives in a 66,000 square foot home, not a typo, valued at $147 million. What do you suppose his electric bill runs? Climate czar John Kerry, who flew his wife's private jet to Europe in 2019 to accept a climate award. Ever worried about the ocean rising with all those melting icebergs? The Obamas bought $11.75 million waterfront estate in Martha's Vineyard. Kerry is his newest neighbor, buying 8.5 waterfront acres, same neighborhood. Barbara Streisand suggests a return to outdoor clotheslines from her 3-acre Malibu, 10,000 plus square foot, 3-building estate. But this is all my fault, living in my 2,300 square foot home. All hail the bi-coastal elites. The Economist. Public Transit and COVID, by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. With the spread of COVID-19 in early 2020, one of the vital services impacted was public transit. Ridership across the nation plummeted due to safety concerns, falling to 80% below normal early on and lingering around 60% below 2019 levels at the end of 2020. Public transit ridership in Texas was slightly more stable, ending the year at around 50% of prior rates in major metros such as Houston and Austin, hardly a distinction. Transit agencies find themselves in a financial lose-lose. Costs have escalated due to additional cleaning and protective equipment for employees. Simultaneously, revenue is down from the sharp drops in ridership and fares, coupled with lower tax revenue from state and local governments. Even with $39 billion from the two federal COVID relief bills, transit agencies could face shortfalls of over $39 billion through fiscal 2023. More funding may become available if subsequent pandemic stimulus measures are enacted, but huge deficits are likely for several years, placing future service and capital spending in jeopardy. While some have commented that the pandemic could signal the death of public transit, it is more an opportunity to evaluate whether the current structure is assisting the populations most in need of such services. Many people using transit systems do not have other options. Some areas, especially in the South and Midwest, are not transit dependent overall, but nevertheless have sizable populations that are. Low income and minority communities in particular tend to rely more on public transportation, and many agencies are evaluating how best to serve these groups. The pandemic has also provided a catalyst to implement innovative methods of contactless fare collection and trip planning. Many agencies were already pursuing new technology and analytics, and the COVID situation created an incentive to bring such advances fully online, thus allowing riders to enjoy safer trip experiences. On-demand services have also been very popular over the past year. Experts expect this to be an area of expansion for transit systems in the future. This structure permits an approach to providing services where they are most needed, even under fiscal constraints. Targeted efforts of this nature have the potential to improve the overall value proposition, thus generating increased prospects for public-private partnerships to provide needed capital resources. Looking ahead, many key segments of the economy will need to modify their business models in a post-pandemic world. Things will definitely be different, and transit is no exception. Efficiency is going to become increasingly important, and COVID safety measures will be needed for the foreseeable future. In the midst of these challenges, however, the essential nature of public transit for some individuals is clear, and successful programs are crucial to their well-being. Stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, February 14th, 2021. Life and Times. There's always light in times of darkness. COVID-19 is a phrase forever etched in our memories and is certain to echo for many generations to come. is brought forth an inordinate amount of trials that have changed the very nature of day-to-day life. Who would have thought roughly 2 years ago we'd all be wearing masks, seeing cardboard cutouts of people in empty stadiums, and waiting our turn for a vaccine to combat a virus that has seen no global boundaries. Yep, when we think of COVID-19, we tend to associate the term with all things negative. For every small business continuing to struggle and in lifting prayers for families who've lost loved ones far too soon, COVID-19 can be synonymous with fear, anger, despair, heartbreak, isolation, and even hopelessness. But even in the darkest days, there is light, a beacon of optimism, helping to shine upon the good that does exist. It's found in the unsung heroes who, day in and day out, give of themselves in order to secure a better tomorrow. So much deserved praise to our frontline healthcare professionals is felt, not just those in the typical hospital setting, but so many others embedded throughout our communities. They're found in every single hospice, skilled nursing facility, assisted living communities, and inpatient rehabilitation settings in the Permian Basin and beyond. And when you think about the rich history of the Permian Basin, it makes even more sense our West Texas community demonstrates it takes care of its own. We all find ourselves here for one reason: the stunning landscape, the impeccable blue skies, and the most vivid sunsets your eyes will ever see. But beyond the natural beauty here in the basin is hearty work ethic, a humble pride, and strong sense of community. All of us, born and raised or traveled to be here, shared in common an appreciation of what it means to settle in the wide open, even among